about right. Hi, I'm Harrison. I'm a grateful alcoholic. I'd like to congratulate the birthday people. That's a real neat thing to see this thing works when you get down to the nuts and bolts of it. Rob, the guy with 30 days, I was in here at 30 days. And, you know, if I can do this thing, good luck to you, man. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I grew up a single kid. Both my parents had been married before. Born in California. Cunning, baffling, and powerful lived with me. And it was okay, you know. I think I saw the first outburst when the neighbor lady, Vera, took my cat. You know, when Dad had come home from a long day at work and probably a stop at the bar, and I said, Daddy, Vera took my cat. And Dad went down and got my cat in the front screen door and kicked the door in and brought my cat back and then left before the cops came. And, you know, I don't know where that came from. I remembered that today, actually. And then looking back on it, we did a lot of geographicals. We left California, I think I was in the first or second grade. We moved to a ranch in Oregon, 22 acres out in the middle of nowhere. And Cunning and Baffling and Powerful came along too. And I didn't really get it, you know. There were bouts of a lot of good memories. I had a horse, we had horses, I always had animals. And then Dad had disappeared. I didn't think much of it, but Mom did, you know. We stayed there a few years. I lived next to a chicken ranch, and I never forget that. Anyway, we left Oregon, and we went to a little town in California because it was going to be different there, looking back. You know, it's going to be different this time. And it was a great place to grow up. It was a little town called Jackson in the foothills of the Sierras. It got real hot there. It was an old gold mining town, an old pioneer town. And it was a great place to grow up. You know, I started scouts there. I had my Stingray, got into sports, and we stayed there. And then things got kind of shitty there, so we had to move again to swim. Came to swim when I was a sophomore. And Dad didn't stay long. Things got pretty ugly. And so I stayed with Mom, and things got kind of ugly there. You know, when I was a kid, I was always interested in alcohol. I'd ask Dad, we'd go down to San Jose. I don't know what we were doing, but we went by some hobos, some guys down by the river. I said, Dad, who are those guys? He said, those are hobos. I said, well, what's the fire for? He says, well, they're cooking a rabbit or something. Oh. Oh. You know, and one of my favorite shows was the Beverly Hillbillies. And I loved that old truck and Ellie Mae and Jethro, but my favorite part was Granny. You know, she'd make that tonic. And smoke could come out of her ears, and she'd do backflips. You know, I was amazed at the tonic. And then, of course, there was Otis the Drunk on Newberry, you know. And so as a kid, you know my folks loved me, and they did the best they could. I was number one, and they did the best they could. And, you know, I didn't like booze. I didn't like seeing Dad like that. And, I didn't really give it much thought, you know. I hated alcohol when it affected my family life like that. But we moved on, and I started school in Squim, and I didn't really fit in. I was a kid from California, long hair. And I got in on the football team and got into sports and got into partying. And I'll tell you, these Washington guys, they know how to throw a party. You just get about 15 gallons of beer and head up there in them hills, and we're going to have us a whiz-bang good time. You know, and we did. And it wasn't really a problem too much then. I could turn it off. 1980, in the yearbook, it says my name, and it says life of the party. You know, and... I got out of school, And I had a girlfriend, football player. She was a cheerleader, you know. She went off to college, and I went up to Bellingham, and I really met some guys. I'd been pretty much a country bumpkin, you know. And I met these guys that came from Eastern Washington that were from farms and ranches that had a pretty good budget. They had unlimited funds to spend, and we would go to bachelor parties on the 27th floor of the Park Hilton, you know. And I'd never been in a skyscraper, and pretty soon, knock on the door, and here's these girls like on TV, you know, and I run and I hide. I think I was an alcoholic right out of the gate, looking over things, you know. I learned in here and through the fellowship and through working with a sponsor and other men that only the alcoholic tries to control his drinking. You know, normal drinkers, they don't like the effect produced by alcohol. They have two or three, and they start to get that little nut edge or fuzz. And that's enough. And I don't think I ever drank like that. I drank for the effect right out of the gate. You know, I learned that I'm allergic to alcohol, you know. So, let's see, got married, had some kids, had a job, got a good job, you know. Went to work for a public sector outfit and steady work in a perfect place for a drunk, you know. You show up, shut up, and do what you're told, even if it doesn't make sense, you do it anyway. Perfect place to hang out. And I left some stuff out there, but it doesn't matter. So anyway, kids come along, and drinking's a problem. Drinking's becoming more of a problem. So my wife sobers up in 1996. And I think, shit, I'm screwed. What am I gonna do? Huh. Well, I can't have any beer at home. So I came up with this brilliant idea that I would only drink when I was out of town. Well, I drank some, and it created more of a problem. And then for respect for her, I did have a conscience, and I didn't want to screw things up, because things got pretty ugly there about 1996. So, I was just amazed the second time I came to AA and went through this book with another man that they wrote this book years before I was born, but there are many, many similarities in there that fit my description. You know, I tried only drinking out of town. That worked for a while. So, 1997, how'd that work? I got up, got a little tight, and I smacked my oldest boy. About then, his mother walked in, grabbed the kids, and see, he wasn't following directions and behaving the way that I wanted him to behave, you know. And looking back on it, I became my dad, you know. I became the guy that I hated. So off they go to grandma and grandpa's, and I get a call the next morning that's either I meet with this person or that's it. So I go to the meeting, and then here's the deal. You call the Child Protective Services, 9 o'clock in the morning, turn you in for whacking your boy, or you go to 30 AA meetings in 30 days, what's the deal? Well, I'm not real stupid, but I said, I'll do the 30-day deal. You know, so I walked in here, and I didn't want to be here. I was scared of you guys. I didn't know what it was. So I did the 30-day deal. And I went back after 30 days, and she said, well, how's it feel to be clean and sober after 30 days, Harrison? I said, well, it feels all right. You guys got what you want, you know. You kept feeding me rope, and then you pulled her tight, you caught me. You're not going to catch me again. And I got up and I walked out. cutting, baffling, and powerful, you know? I think in 97, I decided it was time to do something. And I had a little bit of that 30-day stuff. And I don't remember exactly. I did some awful, shitty stuff. I mean, not violent or abusive. Well, I was very abusive with my mouth. Not with my physically, but mentally and verbally. So things got rough, and I came into AA. And I did step one and step 12. And I heard some stories about things, and I didn't think I drank like that. Because I didn't yet, you know. I hung around the better part of a year. I didn't do a lot of meetings. I didn't follow any directions. I was irritable, restless, and discontented. I didn't like myself. I didn't like my wife. I didn't like my kids. I didn't like my job. I didn't like shit. You know? And I left on a trip. Gonna go deer hunting. Jumped in that truck. Off I went with my gun and some clothes and solo. I stopped in a little town called Waterville, about 20 miles from the ranch I was hanging out at. Figured I'll grab me a six pack. I will wait till I hit the gravel and I'll crack that beer. And it was dark. Well, in the short time I'd quit drinking, they'd made the holes bigger in them cans. And I got to County Road D or whatever it was, and I hit the gravel and cracked that thing and threw that back and poof, spilled it all over, choked. And less than 4 hours after I got to that ranch full of cowboys and drunk people, I was in the spare bedroom throwing up in my cowboy boots so I wouldn't make a mess on the floor. But I didn't have a problem. You know, I continued to live that way for 10 years. Nobody would behave the way I wanted them to. You know, if they'd only leave me alone. Do I have a job? Do I provide for you? Do I come home and knock shit around and knock you around? Yes or no? Yes or no? No, no, no. Then what's the problem? Leave me alone. Just leave me alone. You know, and in September of 2007, the early part of September, I was sick and tired of being sick and tired of this woman ragging on me. So one morning before work, I said, if I'm such a rotten, no good, worthless son of a bitch, there's the door. I'll be gone for 15, 17, I can be gone 16 hours. Pack your shit and get out. I came home that night and the house was empty. I thought, oh wow, I didn't think she'd do that. Well, I'm better off. I'm better off. I got an alcoholic brain. I'm better off without her. I'll be fine. And I went on a toot for about a week. And I guess I call them God shots, you know. And back when I was younger, we used to camp in Idaho, and we made friends with the guy that owned the bar, Grandpa and Grandma's hometown bar. I went there a couple years in a row, and about the third year I went to see, I said, where's Phil? Where's the dune buggy? Well, Phil's in the hospital. Phil's head was the size of a basketball and as yellow as that envelope, you know. What's the matter with Phil? Phil's got cirrhosis to the liver from drinking too much. Well, I put that back there in my head. I forgot about it like we do. So anyway, there were guys around town that I watched deteriorate from alcoholism. I came home. I got ahead of myself a little bit. I came home one day and I said, honey, I picked so-and-so up in town and gave him a ride home. He don't know who I am. She says, wet brain, just like you're going to have if you keep drinking. I thought, what the hell? I walked away scratching my head, God shot, you know. Wet brain, what's his brain full of booze? You know, I didn't get it, but I remembered it. And so the house is empty. Me and the dog are there. And I go on a pretty good toot. You know, I run with guys that were older, functioning alcoholics. We didn't buy booze at the liquor store. We filled pickup cups up with it in Nevada or Wyoming or Northern California. And it wasn't pretty. The last probably 5 years of my drinking was really, really ugly. So anyway, I'm home alone, and I'm going to be better off now. And it took probably a week or 10 days for reality to set in that I was screwed. And a drinking buddy invited me over for dinner. And I didn't want to drink. I didn't want to. He had a big old highball made for me, and he was gassed. Had a big fire burning out in the back, and a big old hole he dug with tobacco burning couches and hoses. I mean, it was dark, and it was a shitty fire. And he said, you know that AA guys, those guys, they almost got me. He says, you're going to be better off. You'll be better off. You'll be better off without her. We're going to have a lot of fun. You know? I'm thinking, oh, shit, man. He said, they almost got me till they got to that God stuff. And oh, man, and I started feeling sick. And I went home, and I got home, and I came up with this idea that I got to move all those pictures. I got to get rid of all these pictures. So I got some boxes, and I started putting pictures in boxes and burying them in the closet. That same night, we had a big king bed with books on the headboard. I get rid of all them goddamn books too, you know. I gotta get rid of this memories, you know. I gotta bury this shit. Well, I'm going through these books, and I'm putting them in a box, and I see this book, and its title is Prayers for Your Husband. So I flip it open, and all these prayers are highlighted, you know. And I'm thinking, oh my God, the woman has been praying for your drunk ass for a long time. And I looked over at that gun safe, and I got to the bottom of that spot the book talks about. And I looked at it, and I looked back at those prayers, and I believe I went crazy. I started crying and shaking, and I was in bad shape. And I didn't know what to do. And I heard something like my conscience say, call so-and-so. Call so-and-so. You know, I couldn't sleep. I couldn't eat. I don't ever want to forget where I came from, because it was bad. It was terrible. And so I called this man and set up an appointment. You know, I went into work, and I had a lot of sick leave. I couldn't function there. I was a wreck. So I went over to this man's house, and we sat out in his pole barn, and we had a talk. And it was the first of many, many, many talks. And, you know, I was done. I was done. And, you know, looking back on it, I don't know. I never had those tremors where I saw snakes and elephants and stuff, but boy, I had some stuff going on in my head. I couldn't sleep. I got, someone suggested melatonin. You know, I went up and I got some melatonin. And I spent a lot of time with my sponsor. And I went to a meeting every day for a couple years, sometimes two meetings. And things started to change. It took a long time. I mean, I was messed up, you know. And I was willing to go to any length to get this thing because, you know, when I first walked into Early Birds, I recognized some members. And hey, bud, we've been saving a chair for you, you know. She came up and told me that she loved me. And you know, I felt, I didn't really feel at ease. I was still just wrapped up pretty tight. And I used to hear, one of the first things I heard was, Harrison, you pray for willingness. So I wrote that in my book, you know. You gotta let go. You gotta get to the other side. Whoa, man, how am I gonna do all that? You know, how am I gonna do all that? Well, I got hooked up in here really tight, and some men called me one day. I hadn't been sober, but maybe a couple weeks. It was late August, early September. Hey, get your butt up. We're down here at the marina. We're going fishing. Huh? Come on. We got the boat in the water. You know, and those guys took me fishing several times. The firsts of sobriety, you know, the first Thanksgiving alone was painful. But I had you guys. You know, I had you guys. The first Christmas, I'll never forget it. But a member of this program that is in this room took me to church. And I was a mess. And talked about hope, you know, hope. So, strong sponsorship in a home group, and I love a men's meeting, not because I have anything against ladies. At first, I didn't care for meetings where gals were because it tripped me out. You know, I was still madly in love with this woman that I'd run off. And she had every right to run off, you know, because I was an ugly guy. You know, I never told her that I would quit, because I heard my father say that hundreds of times. You know, I didn't want to tell anybody I was gonna quit. I just wanted to I'll do better, you know. I learned that I have an allergy. And my allergy is a phenomenon of craving, you know. And unless I can have a little booze, I get extremely restless, irritable, and discontented because I have an ism. I have an incredibly short memory. I could bury the stuff I did until it never saw the light of day. But everybody else could see it except me. That's how I ran. That's how we run, you know. So I had to learn a new way of living. You know, my sponsor said, big guy, it's going to be an adventure. We're going to have an adventure. You stick close with me and we're going to, and boy, did I give him an adventure. You know, we were sitting up on a hill in Eastern Washington. It was October. I was maybe 90 days sober. I was as goofy as a chipmunk on whatever, head still just a spinning, and the man had the patience of Job, you know. And you guys carried me. You carried me through that troubled time. There were some members here back then that remind me of angels today. There was a little gal, she'd shake that finger, don't you go drink or I'll beat you up. You know, she was about yay tall. And her husband was a godsend, you know. He'd talk about the thinker. My thinker is broken, you know, and my thinker was broken. The problem was me and my solution was alcohol. And I lived that way for a long time. And to figure that out, I didn't have a solution, but this does, and strong sponsorship does, and a strong home group does. One year sober, it just happened to fall on a big men's retreat camp out in Medford, Oregon. Jumped in a van with some guys, ran down to Medford. It was about 90 down on the freeway. Up in the hills, it was a nice 70-something degrees, big, huge lake. And here's 150-plus guys from all over the Northwest gonna have a camp out and a horseshoe tournament and a crib tournament and canoes and fishing and T-bone steaks an inch and a half thick. You know, what a blessing that was to see and experience. Nobody fell in the fire. You know, nobody threw a punch. No law enforcement came. You know, I felt at home. And I glommed onto those guys. And every Friday night, for a couple years, I'd meet a man at QFC. And he would drive down to Havelock, and we'd have a Mexican dinner and a meeting. And they had those business meetings, and that wasn't my home group, but it was a little church. And I would go in the church library and look around, you know, and I'd find these little books. I had the gift of desperation when I got here, and I've learned that pain is a stepping stone to a new freedom. You know, I wasn't ready to quit drinking when I came here the first time. I wasn't done yet. Why? Because I'm an alcoholic, and I try everything, and I read that stuff in that book that if you can go out and drink like a normal drinker, our hats are off to you. My God, that's me. I'm gonna go drink like a normal drinker, because I got this phenomenon of craving. You know, until it was explained to me the second time that only an alcoholic tries to control his drinking. Only an alcoholic tries to control his drinking. You know, I had to play that over and over, but it wasn't hard for me the second time. I was beat. I drank all the fun out of drinking. And it happened slowly. You know, if I could drink like I drank when I was 18 consistently, I'd still be drinking. I can't do it because of this progressive illness. It didn't seem to go real fast for me, but my sprees get closer and closer. Be good for 4 or 5 days, and then that phenomenon, I didn't know what it was, but that truck would just whoop, turn into that bar, you know, and then like the book, oh hell, I'm already late, what's the use, you know? If I stay till 11, they'll be in bed when I get home. And it was just a vicious cycle. And to break that cycle, I had to do some work. And I started the steps with my sponsor. But every time I would get to that force, to think about, get that paper out, I'd go crazy. I start shaking in the memory and the inventory, you know, and I'd say, well, let's just put that away for a little while. Let's put that away for a little while. I had this impending doom hanging over me. In my first probably 6 months, a guy came out to my house and we set up my kitchen table, another member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had to learn how to feel, because I didn't know how to feel. I learned what anxiety was. The whole world was caving in on me, caving in fast. And I never had had an anvil or a bowling ball sitting right here. And man, I was in rough shape. And when that man left my house, that feeling was gone, you know? Kind of like when you get done with that fourth and fifth step, the relief of freedom, you know. I gotta ask God to relieve me of the bondage of self, you know, on a continuing basis, because I'm an alcoholic. Self will run riot, you know. That's how I ran. Today I try not to run that way. And through you guys, and a sponsor, and a home group, and many, many, many meetings, I've learned a new way to live. And it's a lot easier today. At about 3 years sober, one of the hardest things for me to do was let go of my my significant other, but I had to let go. I had to let it go. I was in no shape, way, or form to be in a relationship with anybody. You know, I had a lot of work to do, and I followed directions. And I would lay in bed and cry and say, let go, let go, let go, let go, you know. And let go, let go, let go. And over time, I got to the other side, and slowly. And at, I don't know, three and a half years or something, you know, the pipes broke in my ceiling. It was winter time, flooded the bedroom, and I had started talking to my ex-wife. You know, things kind of fell into place. We started going out on dates a little bit. And, you know, when I came in here, I didn't like the man in the mirror. I didn't like him. And Alcoholics Anonymous teaches me how to be a better man. You know, if you do the deal, things change, you know. And so we reunited, and we got some outside help. We went to some counseling stuff, and turned out good. You know, you trust God, clean house, and help others. At 5 years sober, that job I had that was for the public sector was getting to me. I was in a position where there was going to be some retirement, and I was going to get into the leadership part of it. And I didn't like it. I wrote about it, and I looked at it, and it was a great job for a guy that, you know, I don't know, it seemed like it was time to go. And I've heard about North Dakota. And I you know, us alcoholics are kind of overdoers. You know, and I love, you know, I used to sit on the bar stool and think about this and think about that. And at 3 years sober, I was sitting on a Harley, 3.5 years, 4 years sober, going across the Western United States with guys and gals in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that's what adventure's about. So at 5 years, I talked with my wife, and she said, well, I know that job's getting at you, and you've never really been happy there, and I'll support you in whatever you'd like to do. So I took off from North Dakota, and I took a buddy of mine that I partied with years earlier that's now clean and sober, I believe, and we hit the trail. And I got out to North Dakota, and it worked well. You know, I'm sober, I'm dependable, I'm accountable, and I'm an overachiever. And I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but things worked well, and it didn't take me long to climb up to get near the newer truck and the route and the trainer. And I got to meet guys from all over the country. And it was an experience I never would have experienced without Alcoholics Anonymous and people like you and a higher power. You know, I trained guys from all over the world to send these guys to ride with me. It was a trip, you know, and it was inclement weather and hot and blizzards, you know, it was just a blast. And the first thing I did when I got there is I got on AA.org, or whatever it is, you know, the internet, and I found a meeting. And I made friends there, sober friends, that had Harleys. And, you know, I got to experience Sturgis sober. And, you know, the cool thing is, when I got to Sturgis, I had some buddies from Squim that were going to meet me there, that were in the program, you know. It's just been an incredible journey. When I left, I had a son that was a lot like me. And we talked before I left for North Dakota. And I said, buddy, you're killing your mom, and I'm not doing very good either. You know, you come from pretty good stock, and you took the wrong turn, and only you can make the U-turn. I think I was in North Dakota about 5 months, and the phone rang. He'd been arrested in Everett, was laying in jail, and my prayers had been answered. God shot. He went to treatment after he was in jail for a while, and I got him a job there in North Dakota. He attended some meetings with me. I believe him to be on the straight and narrow as I speak tonight. He also went right to the top. You know, it's not about what we say, it's about what we do and how we act. You know? You know, that miracles happen in here. And it's pretty cool. Alcoholics Anonymous carried me when I could hardly walk and got me through that first Christmas and the first Super Bowl and the first hunting season and the first Thanksgiving. And all those holidays were, you know, things were pretty rough. Today I have a host of friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. Most of the guys I run with are in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, to the new guys, you know, I had to keep coming back, but I didn't know then what I know now. And if you just stay here, it's so much easier. I'm gonna close out with something out of a vision for you. You know, abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you all and keep you until then. Thank you.